From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 25th installment of our ongoing conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the political economy and history of the USSR. And we've made it up to 1912. We've been sort of inching there in almost real time over the last few weeks from 1905. But we're going to look at the Prague Conference, which took place early that year, that Lenin helped to organize, it was a central figure in organizing, and then Trotsky's attempt at conference in Vienna that ended up some interesting challenges later in 1912. So why don't we pick it up there?
Great. Good morning. Okay, so the year 1912. What happened in 1912 was of great importance to 1917, as I will try to point out. So in 1912, the sixth all-Russian party, that is the Russian Social Democratic Labor Party conference, was held in Prague in January of 1912. 20 party organizations were represented, and the conference was conducted by Lenin. And what was significant and momentous in this conference was that the Bolsheviks constituted themselves as an independent Marxist party. And they called themselves the Russian Social Democratic Labor Party, parentheses, Bolsheviks. Okay. Why was this so dramatic? Well, the Mensheviks were expelled from the party, and the formal unity of the Bolsheviks, formal only, that had existed since 1903 with the Mensheviks, was cut forever. So the Prague Conference inaugurated a party of a new type, because before they were a political group. And the new type is what we call Leninism, which is synonymous with the Bolshevik Party.
Right.
All right. So in Marxist archives, they have the history of the Communist Party of Russia, written by the Communist Party of Russia, and they say that the purge of the ranks of the proletarian party of Mensheviks, which was effected at the Prague Conference, had an important and decisive influence on the subsequent development of the party and the revolution. If the Bolsheviks had not expelled the Mensheviks from the party, which they call compromisers, the proletarian party would have been unable in 1917 to rouse the masses for the fight for the dictatorship of the proletariat. We will see, so they say, if they had not expelled the Mensheviks, well, we will see why the Mensheviks would have cooperated and did with the provisional government. And so, now, why was there an urgency to create this separate, independent, Marxist, revolutionary Bolshevik party? Well, because the years after 1905 were very difficult. The difficult conditions brought about by the defeat of the 1905 revolution, the Bolshevik alone remain as a political group who remained faithful to the party program, the Marxist party program. There had been a disintegration of the opposition groups and trends there had been a disappointment with the revolution, and there had been increasing efforts of intellectuals who had deserted the party, people such as Bogdanov and Bazarov and others. There had been an effort on their part to revise the theoretical foundations of Marxism. Lenin talked about them as Marxist critics in quotation marks. Okay, so we have the years after 1905, where the integrity of the various group within the Russian Social Democratic Party kind of dispersed. So we have this effect, but by and by, and certainly by 1912 and 13, there was a relaxation of the repression by the Tsarist government. Now, if we look at some figures, we can see what was happening. It is estimated that between October 1905 and April 1906, that's the years of the revolution, 15,000 peasants and workers were hanged or shot, 20,000 injured, and 45,000 sent into exile. So the years after the revolution were marked by a dramatic rise in the numbers of death sentences and executions. For example, if we compare the year 1905, there had been a maximum of 26 executions. But in 1909, at the apex of the repression, there had been 537. These are official executions. By 1912, execution had gotten down to 123 from 537. And in 1913, shortly after the January conference, Prague conference, it had gone down to 25. So things had relaxed. These numbers, of course, do not include, summary execution of military mutinies, and also official statistics excluded execution during punitive expeditions, especially in Siberia, the Caucasus, and the Baltic provinces. By 1906, there were 4,509 political prisoners in Russian Poland, which was 20% of the empire's total. So it had been fierce, and it had dispersed the revolutionary fervor. However, the reaction to the relaxation of repression took several forms within the Russian Social Democratic Labor Party. For example, one group, this is relaxation. One group advocated liquidating underground activities and parties and acting in complete legality. They were saying, okay, repression is over, and now we can work with the Duma and with in complete legality. We don't need underground activity. We don't need revolutionary party, in effect. Now, those who advocated liquidating were called the liquidators. That's one group. Another group refused to act in legality altogether, and they were called the Otsovits, or the Otsovits. The Trotskyites had ostensibly separated themselves from the Mensheviks and were pursuing centrism, a supposed effort at reconciliating Mensheviks and Bolsheviks under the direction of Trotsky. We'll get back to this. Trotsky, so-called non-factionalism. Right. So, as a result of the relaxation, these groups were saying, well, let's stop being underground and printing stuff and, rousing the proletariat, etc. It's just, things are good. Now, let's... And some were saying, No, we must continue. We cannot participate in anything. So there were, you know, these things. Now, we will see what the position of Lenin was, which was really strictly classically Marxist. What Lenin wanted eventually at the Prague conference when we get there was we operate both in legality and in illegality. We stay underground, but we have some activities that are overground. For instance, we do not oppose representation of delegates, representation of working class and peasant delegates in the Duma.
Right.
They should ask for an 8-hour day work.
Right.
They should ask for a distribution of land. This is perfectly Marxist because in 1850, Marx said after the failed 1848 revolution, look, we lost. What we have to do is, yes, ally ourselves with the petty bourgeoisie in some things, but also keep the proletarian and the workers' consciousness and activities in the forefront. We have one culture, and we have to keep it alive, and that's
yep.
the proletarian workers' culture.
Yep.
But at the same time, we've got to ally ourselves with the bourgeoisie in some things. Like, you know, regaining some of the things we lost.
Right.
Did you want to say something?
No. I'm following it. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, with the repression relaxing, we have this kind of lack of focus. This kind of centripetal, or rather centrifugal force.
Like inertia sets in. It's or even a chaos from an inertia trying to settle in on a moving train, because you have conscious effort on the one hand by the Tsar and the entrenched forces inside Russia in the aftermath of 1905. Here's your reforms and. You have representation in the Duma. You have some of these, you know, demands for things like an 8-hour day or whatever are met. That we stop shooting people in the street and such.
Yeah.
And then people kind of demobilize because this, you know, short list of demands starts to get met. But the way things work, of course, they end up, you know, the Tsar ends up, you end up with, for example, a slaughter in a mine that basically was owned by British capital in Siberia. And that gets people back in the street and other things.
Right.
So, yeah, so I just wanted to move
Yeah, you wanted to close. Sure, first you get the fist, and then you get a little, the fist, and then a bit of carrot.
Right.
So, so the fight against the liquidators and the Otsovists, as well as against the Trotskyites or the Trotskyists, confronted the Bolsheviks with the urgent necessity of uniting all the Bolshevik and forming them into an independent Bolshevik party. And this was absolutely essential, not only in order to put an end to the what Lenin called the opportunist trends, which generally means the reformist, the Menshevik, within the party, which were splitting and confusing the working class, but also in order to complete the work of mustering the forces of the working class and preparing it for a new upward swing of the revolution, because at the Prague Congress, he said there is a new fervor for it now that the terror has passed. Okay, so now we're at the Prague Conference, and excuse me. So Lenin gave a report, an analysis on the task of the party in the present situation. And he gave this profound analysis of the political situation within the country. And he showed the revolutionary sentiment among the masses was running high. And the conferences emphasized that the task of the conquest of power by the proletariat remained that of a democratic revolution in Russia. Not sure that I can gloss that. So the important thing is to see what he meant about this revolutionary. What was the Revolutionary Party supposed to do? Lenin never changed, really. Even in 1923, he said that Bolshevism had remained in place as a continuity from 1903 to 1917. Oh. And, of course, he never strayed from what he had written in What Is to Be Done, that the object was to take state power. But the question was only when and under which circumstances, and when it actually happened in 1917 that he said, let's take seize power, it startled everybody, because everybody in the Bolshevik Party itself, because they thought they would have to go through a bourgeois democracy, which they had, you know, since February, at any rate. In Prague, he said that he described the task of the Revolutionary Party. The Revolutionary Party should unite into one inseparable whole the assault on the government in the name of the entire people. The assault on the government. So, violence. This doesn't mean, you know, running blood, but violent overthrow. That is, with armed, not petitions.
Right. That actually was another point of divergence with Lenin and Trotsky.
Oh yeah.
Stalin writes that about that period, that you know, Trotsky and the one of the groups that he was associated with that wanted to petition. The Duma got the liquidators. They got 1,300 signatures on a petition for the right to strike, free association, etc. And at the same moment, hundreds of thousands of workers were, you know, in the streets with the signs of the Bolsheviks.
There you go. There you go. Yes, at the Vienna conference, of course, under the guise of uniting all the factions, he was really promoting the agenda of the liquidators, right. And Stalin said so, and so did Lenin.
Yeah, he always had the faction that was talking about factions. You know,
I mean, this group was at each other's throat in no time.
Right.
This unified. Right. How can you unite the liquidators who say we'll act in legitimacy, and the Austerlitz who said we will not? You know.
Right, we don't recognize your legitimacy.
Yeah.
It's illegitimate.
So the second task is to assume the revolutionary training of the proletariat, revolutionary training, to give them theory.
Right. This is what we were talking about last week, too, when you had, and the week before, you had these different events take place in 1905 that motivated the workers into the streets, and, you know, some rather radical responses from the workers, because mm-hmm. they had had enough, and there was no leadership to say, okay, this is what we do next. And so when the czar and anybody else that wanted to throw at the workers did whatever they would do to them, there was no engagement in a battle. It was like a military struggle with only one side. The other was just fodder because there was no leadership. And so
that was in Moscow in December. That's right.
And so now we're talking about recognizing that condition and building a party that would provide that leadership as we move into the events of 1912, et cetera.
And training of the proletariat and the safeguarding of its political independence, training of the proletariat, you know, because Lenin said there is no, without revolutionary theory, you cannot have a revolutionary movement.
Right.
So the training is important. Then the party should also provide guidance of the economic struggle, in the economic struggle of the working class, plan action, etc. But should the actions be spontaneous, then so the party should be present during spontaneous conflicts of the masses, which it wasn't in Moscow. You see, this is all learned from
after
1905.
The fact. Right, that's right.
A party should be present during spontaneous conflicts of the masses against their exploiters, so as to bring them into our camp, to increase the number of the proletariat, not to scatter them afraid and divided and betrayed. So these were what a revolutionary party was to Lenin, what he meant by Bolshevik party. And he was very clear in his writings. He said, the Bolshevik party, what we call Leninism, he said, the emancipation of the oppressed class is impossible, not only without a violent revolution. Again, we're not talking about fisticuffs. We're talking about removing one class of rule with another.
Right.
But also without the destruction of the apparatus of the state, of the state power, which was created by the ruling class.
Right.
I mean, I don't know whether Marx or Lenin said that the bourgeoisie actually took over the state apparatus of the feudal state, you know, because the bourgeoisie had grown within the feudal state.
That's right.
So some institutions were already there, and they could adapt them to the development of capitalism, but no such thing could happen in a socialist revolution. They would smash them. I mean, you couldn't adapt the bourgeois state to the socialist state.
It was developed in antagonism to workers. It's impossible to take control
you lose your base.
That's right.
And he goes on. So now here he comes. Now we see how Lenin saw the Mensheviks. He characterizes the Mensheviks' idea of revolution. He writes that the Mensheviks says, first, let the majority of the population, while private property still exists, in other words, we haven't overthrown it. First, let the majority of population, that is the people, while the rule and yoke of capital still exist, let them express themselves in favor of the party of the proletariat. So we wait until the proletariat comes to the party. And only then can and should the party take over. And Lenin continues, so say the petty bourgeois democrats who call themselves socialists, who are in reality the servitors of the bourgeoisie. Now, to this, let's wait until everybody's with us, idea of revolution, Lenin says. We say, let the revolutionary proletariat first overthrow the bourgeoisie, that is, a rather restricted group of the population, let them overthrow the bourgeoisie, which is really what happened in 1917, break the yoke of capital, and smash the bourgeois state apparatus. Then the victorious proletariat will be able rapidly to gain the sympathy and support of the majority of the toiling masses, non-proletarian masses. He's referring here to the peasants, which you know, he will consider allies, will make allies of the proletarian.
Right.
So anyway, what did he say? Will be able rapidly to gain the sympathy and support of the majority of the toiling non-proletarian masses by satisfying their needs at the expense of the exploiters.
Right.
So once you have power and you can begin to satisfy the needs, you can get Allah, you can get, then you get the masses.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Masses first, then revolution.
I mean,
Lenin says, no, the vanguard party, which is what it is, will carry out the overthrow of the state and will seize power, and then will gather support by distributing, by improving the situation.
Yeah, by serving the people. We'll serve the people and obtain their support.
That's right.
Right.
So it's very, and it's really what Stalin did.
Yeah, you know, when we're thinking, going back just a step for a minute, talking about the question of trying to adapt, you know, the absurdity of the idea of trying to adapt the bourgeois state to the needs of working people. The bourgeois state is essentially constructed as a gun to the head of working people. And if you're going to take it over, it's like someone has a gun to your head, and what you do is put your hand on the trigger, but you still continue to point the gun at your own head.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense because its purpose was, you know, this other purpose, which is hostile to your interests. And so it is something that has to be smashed. We've got about 2.5-3 minutes. So where do you want to go with that?
Just so we can pick it up again. Okay, we're at the Vienna Conference, and it's August 1912. And Lenin and Trotsky, I'll say this in 2.5 minutes, preamble to the Vienna Conference, because we already know that he's going to gather all these groups together. Mm. Now, Lenin and Trotsky, contrary to what the Trotskyists maintain, were in bitterest opposition for almost their entire careers, not only before, but also after the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
After 1917, Trotsky and Lenin were in constant conflict over the question of the prospects for socialist construction, how to do it, the question of trade unions, the question of war and peace, and questions of party unity and discipline, all with their grave implication on the maintenance of the proletarian dictatorship in the Soviet Union. They were, it can be documented. Now, the only change came after Lenin's death. So Trotsky had been at war with Lenin over essential points, and that continued, and the change came after Lenin's death. At that time, Trotsky chose to renew his old attack on Leninism under the guise of defending Leninism.
Again, and
called it Stalinism.
Right.
That's what he does. The name.
Yeah, the names have been changed to protect the innocent. And that's what he does. You know, hi, here's my faction. We're here to fight factionalism. You know, it's and yet people have been doing that. I saw that happen at a radio station in New York that I worked at, where, you know, people came in, broke up this community radio station that had been serving the movement in New York City for decades, essentially accused the people who are actually activists of being factionalists, as they created a faction that was being funded by some business people who were about ready finally to steal the signal and use it to sell, like, products, green living products, you know. So, all right, we're going to have to come back to this, all of this next week. We made it at least an overview of 1912 through 1912. We can go back and flesh that out some next week. And I appreciate your time and have been enjoying this again today, as I've been enjoying this whole series a lot. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.